What's going on, guys? Back for another episode. This is Chris Mead with My Biggest Lessons. I got my man Max from Bala Bangles on. What's going on, dude?
Hey, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing good, dude. Thanks for coming on. I mean, we've been a longtime e-commerce internet friends. I appreciate you coming on and making the time. For those that don't know what Bala is, and obviously you've been living under a rock or don't have a Pilates fiance, give me the rundown. What's Bala? Why should I care?
Yeah, so Bala is a design-led approach to fitness accessories and equipment. It's a space that's traditionally really utilitarian. So it's all about function, not at all about form. And what we'd realized through this process of building Bala was that you look at the adjacencies in athleisure or boutique fitness, and they're really thoughtfully designed, but the products you're actually interacting with to get fit are all sort of intimidating, right? And so we wanted to bring that same design sensibility to the products that you're actually using. And what we found, excitingly, is that people actually are more inclined to use them as a result. So we're trying to disrupt the fitness industry and make it a hell of a lot more beautiful, a lot more inspirational.
I love it. And you guys just opened up like an online portal, right? Like talk to me through that. Like, what was the thinking there of the Bala? But what's the name of it? Bala Fitness or Bala Moves?
Yeah, we're calling it Bala Size. Okay. And it's really this macro effort to sort of distance ourselves from the traditional fitness industry. So it's not like we're trying to build Barry's 2.0. Even in terms of the folks we've hired folks from like beauty brands and like traditional D2C brands and less so from like the fitness universe. And so similarly, we wanted to name it Bala Size because it's a unique form to work out. We're designing products that in some instances are versions of things you've used before. So our first product was Bala Bangles. It was a new school take on the old school wrist weights from the 80s. But then we're also designing products that don't look like anything you've seen. So we have what's for all intents and purposes is like a weighted steering wheel. We call it the power ring, but it's just weight in a different form factor that's more ergonomic than a kettlebell or dumbbell for mat-based workouts. And so in the case of those products, we have a lot of people saying, I love this thing, but you got to teach me how to use it. So the thinking behind Bala Size was, let's take sort of the maximalism and like design sensibility of the brand and apply it to fitness content, which again, tends to be really boring. All the stuff you've seen is like a really minimalistic studio or a $10 million home without furniture. And so we've brought this like sort of like design sensibility that's at once futuristic and like vaguely nostalgic to fitness content. So yeah, we launched that about a week and a half ago.
Let's go. Congrats. That's sick. And it's also like a hard thing for us as founders, right? Is you spend and invest this money in a curriculum, but that doesn't really, I'm assuming there will be some cost structure to it where you charge them to be taking the classes, right? But for us, like when we invest in education and content, that's a cost center. Like that costs us money to do. And it's hard to like, because we need to be focused on brand, like selling the product, moving units, and spending time on something that's so outside of the norm of what you guys are doing. It's a risk, but like definitely could play off for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the kind of thing, and I imagine you guys think about it similarly, but it's the kind of thing you have to believe will pay dividends over time because you're not going to see that immediate return. Like first and foremost, we felt like we had a responsibility to folks that had already bought the products to educate them on how to use it so that they make the most of them and fall in love with it. We have this like unique like category benefit of having a physiological response. Like you have endorphins when you work out to the products you're working out with. And so people are like legitimately falling in love with our products. And so we wanted to like stoke that as much as we possibly can, but there's no expectation, like success metrics or KPIs that correspond to that are really, really arbitrary because over time we believe it's like a really compelling marketing platform, but near term it's burning money. It's setting money on fire.
Yeah. No, I feel that. But it's cool. So talk me through this. And I love when we talk because it's honestly like the shit that I'm dealing with, stuff that you're dealing with. Only so many people could really like understand what's going on. And so when I go to the Pilates studio and I know that I say that I know Max from Bala, like you should see the react. It's like I know like Mark Cuban, and that'll be another conversation for us. But like it is so funny. So walk me through like there's a fine balance of like what you guys do organically versus from a performance marketing side, like how do you split up your budget between organic situations and like thinking just brand first? Because I mean, there's, you could knock off the product a million different ways, but brand is really what matters. Like, when you build out your marketing structure, is it more brand focused events? Is it more performance marketing? Like, how do you think about that? And also, like, in terms of budgeting as well?
Yeah, totally. I will answer the question, I promise. But I think what we think about when, in terms of why Bala is unique, they're two separate but related sort of pieces of this pie. We think on the product side, like, the products are the best fitness products that exist in market. And thankfully, the bar is quite low from both a like design and from a material standpoint. So you take old school wrist weights, for example, like our first product, they are neoprene filled with iron filing or sand. They'd slide around your wrist. They'd absorb sweat. So they'd inevitably smell bad and they looked terrible, right? And so on the product side, we're trying to make like the highest quality products possible. And then similarly, and I kind of alluded to this on the brand side, the fitness industry sort of presumes that you're aspiring to be the next Olympian, when in fact, most of us are trying to find the motivation to get off the couch at the end of a long day. And you're like thinking, do I reach for the beer or do I get my ass in the car and go to the gym? And so it's been important for us to try to deliberately expand the sort of brand definition of what fitness actually is. And we've deliberately blurred the lines between fashion and fitness, which is why you're going to see stuff from us that like doesn't look like anything you've seen. It's super inclusive. It's super body positive. It's also got this kind of fantastical otherworldly sensibility. So there'll be like fog and colors and all of that. And so when you think, to get to your question about how we balance performance relative to brand, I'm going to be the first to admit we're terrible at performance marketing. We've never really done stuff that's like true performance marketing. We've been just hyper-focused on brand because that's so differentiating for us. And I'll tell you, there's this like romance, and I'm sure you've felt it, especially when speaking with institutional capital. It's like, there's this romance around hyper-growth, but I'm actually really stoked on the idea of slow, sustainable growth. I want Bala to be around 10 years from now, not to flare out in 10 months. And so Building the brand happens over a long period of time. And so even though we've been almost exclusively focused on brand, like, we'll have time to get to true performance. And it's frankly, it's something that we're working on like a daily basis over here. It's like, how do we do justice to brand whilst also being more like having stronger call to actions, more benefit led, more product marketing.
And I think it works in your favor that way. For us, it's like, we have been so reliant on performance marketing where one of my biggest mistakes as an owner was discounting off the jump. And it's led to this fact that people probably feel, or at least I feel, that CrossFit's always on sale. There's always a $10 discount out there, or a $20 discount if you got to dig deep enough on Google. And for with you guys, establishing that brand first is going to help that performance marketing come when the time is. Because what we've realized is like, slashing budgets for 2021 and 2022, everyone's got to get leaner, right? Like, that's just been the nature of the beast. We cut all those organic and cool moments that felt good, us being at Coachella, those good, like, those happy moments. And our performance actually tanked because we stopped being that cool brand. So now it's like us trying to dig back and do those organic brand moments. And it's funny how the two correlate. So I'm excited for y'all.
Yeah, for sure. And I would just echo that. Like, we found, our ambition is to be omnichannel, but it was genuinely sort of accidental. Like, early days, we'd launched the brand via Kickstarter. Early days, we had no credibility whatsoever. And so when retailers like Goop and Free People reached out, we're like, this is amazing. Like, they give us credibility. It's more discoverable. There's more units out in the world. And we'd had this like early belief that there would be this sort of virtuous circle between retail and our own .com and Amazon, et cetera. And I think similarly to what you're saying is like, when you cut one out, you actually see the others sort of like suffer a bit as well. And I think that's true in the marketing mix also. It's like, you got to do all of them well. And when you do, they're like kind of bigger than the sum of their parts.
Exactly. Let's get back to, name of the show, My Biggest Lessons, the investment stuff. I mean, the Shark Tanks, all the working with the Mark Cubans of the world and all that. You tell me we wanted to build sustainable growth to people listening. The easiest way to sell an investor, I'd assume in my eyes, is we're a rocket ship. You could exit in 2 years and you're going to have a crazy valuation. How has that conversation gone with investors? Has it changed over time? And what are some things you've taken away and been like, fuck, I wish I didn't do this or say this 6 months ago or 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah, totally. On the investor side, like, we're brand marketers at heart. And so it was always a world that was sort of foreign to me, but that I didn't necessarily feel all that good about. I think that, like, there were these cautionary tales in brands like ours, like Outdoor Voices, that had raised money against these crazy sort of textile valuations. And that money, that check, was really more of an obligation than a reward. And they really suffered to meet the corresponding growth goals. And so I had this, like, kind of natural and healthy skepticism about it. We did go on Shark Tank, which you'd mentioned, and we closed a deal with Mark Cuban and Maria Sharapova. And those guys are actually awesome because they're not hounding you for updates and, like, holding you to unrealistic growth goals that require that you do things inauthentic to your business. Like, I imagine you can do the same. It's like, I can see when a company is VC back now or not. Like, I just, 100%. From what they're doing and putting out in the world, it's, like, overwhelmingly obvious. And I was so, like, oblivious and ignorant to that before having started Bala. So on the investor side, I don't have, like, all that many sort of regrets because we've not taken on institutional capital outside of the Shark Tank deal. I will say one of, like, the critical lessons learned, though, that is relevant to that is that success or perceived success outside looking in is incredibly expensive. And I remember some of the first early POs from Dick's Sporting Goods, like, nearly put us out of business. Like, you have to remember that, particularly in retail, let's say you have net 60 terms, which aren't great, but they're not the worst either. You have some retail.
They're good enough. They're good enough. Yeah.
On 90 and 120. But it's like, if the product takes 45 days to produce and 30 days on the water, and then you're on net 60 terms, you're not getting paid for 4 months, right? So, and with the supply chain delays as they are, you're really ordering 6-7 months in advance, sort of depending on where you're manufacturing. And so that's one of the really critical early lessons was, like, say no to even to POs that, like, contribute to top line revenue because you might not have any cash to do anything else with them. And again, I think, like, exercising some restraint, it's been arguably, alongside working with my wife and family, sort of the hardest lessons to learn, one that I'll kind of carry with me.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Have you guys, so in the early days, like, we would just invest all of our cash back in, like, hey, Walmart comes for a PO, sure. Like, the weakest part of our company was the finances. We didn't have that strong CFO figure for a long time, nor did we have the Mark Cuban advice coming in, right? Like, were they helpful in funding the POs, or are you guys funding POs in a different way now than you were before the show?
Yeah, it's funny because they invested $900K for 30% in, I think it was February of 2020, and that money was gone quite quickly. I think we did turn to them at one point about the Dick's POs, and Mark rightly said, hey, careful here. You might be, like, what's the expression, like, over your skis a bit on this one, right? And so they didn't fund them. So we had to self-fund everything, and we continue to do so. So Bala is, like, outside the 900K from Shark Tank, always had to sell one unit to buy two, sell two to buy four. And then we're just as efficient as we can be in operations, in content production, et cetera. And when you talk about, like, sustainability in terms of, like, business growth, I think that, like, need to be efficient is, like, a major sort of, like, pillar of being able to do that effectively.
100%. And you guys are still working with Dick's?
We are a little bit, not to the degree we used to be. To be honest, like, I think that's yet another lesson learned. Like, we've made this really concerted effort to be differentiated in product and brand, but in Dick's, Bala actually sort of blends in rather than stands out. And so our stronger retails like Saks Fifth Avenue or Nordstrom or Free People, Bala stands out in those environments. But it's when you think about the consumer, they're the same consumer, right? So yeah, there's more alignment in that sort of environment. And we've just seen more traction there than in, like, the Dick's Sporting Goods of the world.
So true. And it's so tough cutting a retailer, like, transitioning away. Because in the early days, Dick's Sporting Goods calling you and you want to, like, of course you want to pick up the phone and do as much business as possible. But, like, I never thought I'd get to a point where there was a bad retailer or not a retailer that fits our brand. And, like, that was a tough lesson with Walmart was, when we were there, they were putting our product next to a $2 Frisbee and a $6 football. Like, that's not a good brand position for a $150 product. And it was a tough lesson for us to learn. We're on the opposite end of the spectrum. Dick's does a very good job of making CrossNet stand out and is like the ideal partner. So that's been tough, dude. I mean,
like, there's also such thing as like oversaturation. Like, there's something compelling about like going into Dick's and having it just be like perfectly displayed, whereas like if you then find yourself in a Walmart the following day, it actually is like erodes your brand to some degree, this for someone to see it in that environment. So I've always looked to Yeti as like the blueprint for how we want to grow Bala. And so what Yeti did was they grew through smaller independents, like fly shops, right? Like fly fishermen shops. And what they had was like that one-on-one advocacy from sales reps in the most authentic retailers in the world saying, this is the absolute best cooler imaginable. And then they were very, very selective from a major's perspective. And so they were able to grow with Dick's, actually. And you walk into a Dick's and you just see a wall of Yeti stuff, right? And so have the authenticity on the one hand, and then they have the scale on the other. And there's an incredible amount of like restraint and discipline with their having adopted that approach. But they're a $10 billion company or whatever it is.
Got my Yeti right here, actually. This is too funny. Now, that was the conversation today I actually had with one of our distributors was, how are you dealing with knockoffs? And for me, like the thing I said is, and I'm curious your approach too, because I know you've been up against it. Like, there is always going to be knockoffs out there. My job as a marketer and owner is to make you feel embarrassed that you bought that $4 shitty water bottle and that you couldn't afford the $70 Yeti. And like, is that kind of your mindset? Any lessons you've learned for people who are going to be imitating Bala?
Yeah, it's probably the most demoralizing phenomenon for Bala is that we've invented something new and a new approach to this really traditional space. And rather than inspiring folks to be creative, we've just inspired a hell of a lot of knockoffs. And I say that sort of anonymous foreign like counterfeiters that kind of counterfeit for a living. But then there's also like influencers that you would presume would be wildly embarrassed to copy a brand that is a family like self-funded venture. And we just see it all over the board. And so what we've done is try to continue to innovate on product. If people knock off bangles or the ring, it's like they don't have the beam, they don't have the bars, the mat, the like the broader assortment, and win on brand. That I don't necessarily want a pair of bangles with an influencer's name on it when I can like buy into a brand that is genuinely altruistic, wants to destigmatize fitness, make it more like inclusive and inspirational and accessible. That's better than just lining the pockets of the influencer that's trying to leverage fame to make a buck off someone else's idea.
Call them out by name, Max. Call them out. But yeah, that's
fine. I'm not going to do it. But in some cases, they're well known.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I mean, Target ripped CrossNet off. They made their own $100 version. It's rainbow colored. It doesn't stand up. It's garbage. And it's funny because they claim that they support entrepreneurship and the young inventors of the future. But yeah,
well, I'll drop one name. Mirror ripped us off, and it's different looking enough. But we happen to know that Bala was on their sort of mood boards, and so they've like deliberately made it like different enough. But it's so derivative, and honestly, they lost like the magic of the product in the derivation, right? So
of course,
like I was really disheartened to hear the news. And then I saw the actual product. And it's funny, we ordered it and it was like, we'll ship in 3 months. Like, it also had terrible customer service. And we ultimately saw it and it's just like this kind of crazy nonsensical thing. And so it's I'm with you, man. Yeah, when the well-funded or like the big sort of corporate folks take aim at you, you're like, at a personal level, like whomever made those decisions, like, don't they have a little bit higher an ethical standard? Because Target's not Target. Target's a collection of people and somebody decided to rip you off. Exactly. And a bunch of people being like that, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's crazy. But at the end of the day, like, you guys are the leaders in the space. Even if I look at a knockoff Bala, I'm still thinking Bala. And that's the importance that brand plays. I had some guy actually sent me a photo of him and his family playing CrossNet last night. And I looked at it, I'm like, that's not CrossNet. That's a shitty $40 version. But to him, it was CrossNet. To his friends, it was CrossNet. To people Googling it on the internet, it was CrossNet. So like, it's funny.
It's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it, and it's one that I will think about before I fall asleep at night.
It's crazy. All right, I got a few more questions for you before we wrap this up. You work with the wife. I work with my fiance. It is a challenge. I love her to death. She's an amazing talent. But there are times where it's 5 p.m. and I just want my girl, right? I don't want to talk about CrossNet. You don't want to talk about Bala. Give me some advice and tell me like how it is working together.
Yeah, totally. So we started the business about 4.5 years ago. And I'll tell you, for the first 2.5, maybe even 3, it was pretty rough, right? Like we were stepping all over each other. You almost try to flip the switch and be in work mode, but then that work mode would be offensive, even if you're like, this is the way I'd treat any other coworker. And I think that over time, we found that we each have our strengths, and correspondingly, we now have our swim lanes. So it's very clear what she does, and it's very clear what I do. And we consult about those things. So like major decisions aren't made in isolation of one another, but we're not kind of swimming in one another's lanes. And honestly, now we're like phenomenal partners. Like it's actually absurd when I think about where we started versus where we are now. It's like any financial decisions above X number of dollars we make together, anything that I or her are insecure about in terms of like the decision that needs to be made, we consult one another. And anything that affects more than just ourselves in a company we're now leading of 25, 30 people, we talk with one another about. So yeah, the advice is find your swim lanes. And even if you're not perfect in staying in them, it'll help. Don't have any delusions of being able to like kind of work on the same sorts of things and avoid the corresponding turbulence.
No, I love that. And I found personally, like, since we're on top of each other, right? We live in the same apartment. We're working all the time. But I just assume that, and this would go for your fiance, girlfriend, even just business partner, that she would just be able to read my brain, right? You're breathing the same air for 24 hours a day. I assume that she would know the stressors that I need and know the work that I need her to be done. We started having like weekly one-on-ones just for an hour just to get caught up to speed on a Monday. And the work has just been so much more efficient because I'm not getting mad at her when projects fall through the cracks, because I just assumed that she knew what needed to be done. And so yeah, that's been working well for us.
I think there's a couple things. Yeah. And I totally agree. I think like one, you do need a little bit of a safe word when you're trying to turn off. You'll find, obviously, you know this, but like it's an all encompassing thing running a business, particularly a growing business. So safe word is good. The other tip is like step outside yourself and tell the other person they're doing a good job. Like make sure that you're not so focused on your own shit that you can't recognize the contribution of someone else. And I found that acknowledging where I think Nat has like really become a great leader and saying aloud and explicitly, yeah, like that same sort of appreciation is returned tenfold. And it's just a good thing. And you also want to protect the relationship you have with the woman you love. So
absolutely.
Tell her she's doing great.
I love that. Anyone listening, go tell somebody you love them. Tell them they're doing a good job. Doesn't matter if you sleep with them at the end of the night. It could just be a coworker, but show them you love them. But Max, thanks for coming on, dude. Love Bala. So such a fan of what you've done. Love staying in touch with you over the years. And now we're going to be killing it together for the next few years. So congrats on everything.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
Appreciate it, bro. So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.